ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
The cut to the fuel excise has ended, but the Iran war hasn't. So what does that mean for how much we'll be paying at the fuel pump in the months ahead? Today, Sol Kavanagh, energy expert at MST Financial, on the world's diminishing fuel supply and whether we're all out of fix-its. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
To, you know, like think about other options, maybe carpooling, maybe depend more on the public transportation.
It's a little bit disappointing. It would have been nice if they had have extended it for a little while longer.
It is a bit of a hit to the bank account as well as the car.
Nothing you can do about it, can you? Until they get their act together and Trump gets a deal. What do you do?
So the cut to the fuel excise is gone and motorists have really been noticing the difference immediately. So what should we expect in the weeks ahead as we fill up? How much more do you think we'll be paying? How high could it go?
So with the final unwind of the excise cut, which was always going to be temporary, that's, you know, pushing fuel prices to around the $2 a litre mark. But the situation still remains very precarious because the flow through the Strait of Hormuz, which accounts for about 20% of the world's oil and fuel supply normally, still remains largely closed. We're seeing volumes only about 10% or less of pre-war levels. And as long as that's sustained, we're going to see increasingly tight markets and therefore inching up oil prices on average.
Okay, so our petrol prices will what be hitting around that $2 a litre mark, and of course diesel's always worse.
That's right. So diesel and jet fuel have been impacted the most from this crisis, and people can see that at the pump. My fear would be that prices can continue to head higher, and the idea that we could be at $2.50 is not out of the question within the next several weeks.
Okay, well, let's come back to our supply in a moment and what we might see for the remainder of the year. But could you just paint a picture for me, first of all, Sol, so we can actually visualise what is happening with the flow of oil from the Middle East? Because it's not just the Strait of Hormuz that is now being impacted, is it?
That's right. So the way to think about this is about 20% of the world's oil and fuel used to flow through the strait. It has no other way to get to the market. But what we have seen, particularly from Saudi Arabia, which exports close to 10% of the world's production, is they've managed to divert some of their oil. So instead of going through the strait, they've piped it to the west of Saudi Arabia, which is in the Red Sea, further away from Iran, and looked to export the oil that way. So they're looking to export about 4 to 5 million barrels, or close to half of their production. However, in order to get those volumes out via the Red Sea, they need to go down past Yemen, which is where Iran proxy, the Houthis, are now starting and stepping up their attacks on vessels that way too. And that's forcing Saudi to try and get those volumes out the long way, which is to go up instead through the Suez Canal into the Mediterranean, all the way down the tip of Africa, and then up again to get into Asia. And that's adding weeks and a lot of expense to the journey. And the concern for markets is, could we see the Houthis or other Iranian proxies not just attack the tankers, but also look to attack infrastructure like the port which Saudi is exporting its oil out of? And if that happens, then this main way that Saudi Arabia can bypass the blocked straits is also going to be blocked. Wow. And that's going to tighten oil markets even further than they already are.
Well, Saul, let's consider now where the world is up to with supply. So far, many nations, including Australia, not every nation though, has coped pretty well. There were more fuel reserves, weren't there, than we thought?
So Australia's fared relatively well so far for three primary reasons. First of all is there's some volumes of oil that managed to bypass the Strait of Hormuz, like we just talked about in the Red Sea is a big example. Mm. The second one is other countries who are more developing economies, have less ability to pay higher prices. They started rationing fuel or just voluntarily reducing their use of the fuel. So they went without instead of us. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, is China drastically reduced the amount of oil it's using and drawing from its stocks. Now, ultimately, we can't keep drawing down on this oil credit card forever. It will max out, depending on how the war goes, potentially in a matter of months. And that's when things could still get a lot worse.
Okay, so what you're saying is when you open up the reserve cupboards, if you like, around the world, what, they're looking pretty bare at the moment.
Look, we're in uncharted territory in terms of how low our stocks are. Mm. No one knows exactly how much further we can push things before things to start breaking down. And that is a big concern. So I think when we look at things today, where particularly we started to see this escalatory pathway potentially kick off again in the war, it's not the same as it was in March, because today the cupboard's largely bare already in terms of our stock levels. And so if this current disruption to the strait continues, we're going to move much more rapidly towards demand destruction being necessitated at a global level, and therefore supply restrictions being implemented at a government level. And the Australian government's not going to be immune from that. It's going to have to be watching that and potentially go down that path as well, depending how things play out from here.
Mm, and given China has been such a big factor here, where is it up to, do we know? I mean, it seemed to have huge reserves of oil.
Yeah, so it looked like China built up to almost 2 billion barrels of stocks before the war began. The challenge with China is there's not a lot of clarity in what the data is around their stocks and how they've managed to reduce so much of their imports so quickly. And the fear would be that China's actually running down its fuel stocks, petchem stocks, crude stocks, and ultimately will have to pick up its demand again, which would mean that the market tightens even further.
So let's consider then what the government here might be doing behind closed doors. Now, as we spoke about, the cut to the fuel excise has ended and the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, has given no indication that he'll be bringing that back.
So that's not something that we've been considering, bringing back, you know, reintroducing this at some future point. Obviously, we keep all of our policies under review, particularly when there's this much uncertainty in the world, but it's not our intention to bring it back. It's done a really important job.
Do you think, though, that will actually lessen demand because we will be paying more for our fuel?
That is the case. So, look, it's not a popular thing to say, and the reason that the fuel excise was cut is done for largely political reasons. But for those of us in energy markets, we actually look at the fuel excise cut as counterproductive. Now, nobody obviously wants to pay more for their fuel at the pump, but the truth is prices rising is what makes some people think twice before using fuel, or maybe using a bit less or doing less discretionary travel, for example, which helps on a voluntary kind of commercial and market basis reduce demand. Now, when you cut the excise, you undo that price signal. So the truth is, when we have a global crisis like this playing out, it's better for it to come through and we feel it rather than keep going because it's been artificially lowered price by the government.
Okay, so what else should the government be doing? We know it has this national fuel security plan. Everyone's probably forgotten about that by now, but where are we up to on that?
So there's four levels. We're at level two. Be careful, but don't be alarmed. The risk will be if the strait remains largely closed over the next several weeks, particularly also if we see things like the United States restrict its export of fuel and measures like that, then the government could look to go to stage three, which starts to be perhaps more overt, encouraging messaging about how to reduce fuel use across the economy. But the truth is, once we go to level three, we very quickly would end up in level four, which is rationing. And that's the kind of world, for example, where you might see certain servo stations around are only available for emergency and critical services. Given the uncharted territory we're in, given this could still get worse, we do need to have a plan for that rationing measure. And that is there as a backup if things turn out in the worst case scenarios here, and we cannot rule them out at this point.
Well, so let's consider now how the world is working to ensure that we can avoid this problem in the future, so we're actually not reliant or so reliant on these waterways in the Middle East. Now, one way is new pipelines. What is actually happening on that front?
So what you're seeing is a number of the major oil exporters in the Middle East are looking to rapidly build pipelines to bypass the strait. And within a few years, we could get to the point where our reliance on the strait could be half of what it was now. And perhaps within several years, it could be largely removed. As those pipelines build out, not just south and west, but even straight into the Mediterranean, that's going to relieve a lot of this pressure. That said, the scariest thing about the aftermath of this war is it has shown hostile actors that threatening maritime passage to threaten the global economy can be effective in their political ends. And so the worry is we'll see more hostile actors around the world look to pursue this course of action in the future and build the capability to do so.
And the government here, it is looking, I guess, at the possibility of opening a new refinery in WA.
Work will soon get underway to determine if a new oil refinery could be built in Australia.
Building an oil refinery here on the west coast would obviously build our resilience as a nation, as well as particularly.
Really? Benefit. We shut down six of them in the past. Is that actually a good option in your view?
I think there's a right case for a lot of people to be voicing scepticism about how serious the government is about this, given particularly the budget implications of doing so. But on the other hand, fuel security is now front of mind. Australia needs to find ways to be more self-sufficient in fuel going forwards, because the next big maritime trade disruption could be closer to home. Once this study is done, despite the challenges and the cost impost, the national security, the jobs and the politics around that might actually see another refinery get built, as crazy as that might have sounded 6 months ago. And this is all about the world having to move from just-in-time supply chains to just-in-case supply chains, and Australia saying, look, we're not going to get fully self-sufficient again, but we're at least going to try and get half the way there so we can look after our critical service sectors, our economy and our defence establishment when we get a major trade disruption or a major geopolitical event unfold at no notice in our region.
So that's one thing the government is looking at. Of course, the switch to renewables is really key as well in lessening our reliance on oil. And we're doing pretty well. New figures show electric vehicle sales here doubled in the 3 months to June the 30th.
That's right. So the war, and particularly the spike we've seen in diesel prices, has seen a massive uptick in EV purchases. We just also need to look at, so far, based on the EVs on the road to date, that's only reduced our total fuel demand by about 1%, right? So it's a question of how rapidly that can move. And also, what about sectors such as parts of the rural economy and also jet fuel, where the technology to electrify that is not viable yet? And so I think you'll see the government look to both increase electrification where it's viable, and particularly in the EV segment, but also look to make us more self-sufficient for our fuel supply, given that certain areas, particularly for diesel and jet fuel, don't have near-term viable electrification options.
Okay, and all these sort of solutions, they will take years to actually complete and to make a big difference.
And billions of dollars.
And billions of dollars. So just sum up for me then, Sol, what should we be prepared for now in the short term?
Look, in the short term, we need to expect overall tightness in the global fuel supply chain. We also need to brace for this to start flowing through all other parts of our economy. And so I think we need to at least prepare for the possibility that we might have to tighten our belts fiscally, but also in terms of the fuel supply we use. And then also look to say, look, we need to prioritise some government funds going forward to make us more self-sufficient in fuel so we don't end up in this vulnerable position once again. And all of these things suggest a higher cost outlook for the taxpayer over the next several years.
Sol Kavanec is the head of energy research at MST Financial. This episode was produced by Ilaria Brophy and Louise Mylan. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is Sydney Pete. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.